This episode brought to you by
Audible.
Audibletrial.com/horror virgin for 30 days free and a book to get you started. For your book recommendation, Mikey.
That's right. Since this movie is about hunting people for sport.
Most dangerous game.
Yeah. I recommend Heart of Darkness by Joseph Conrad.
Ooh.
Okay, I can see that.
I read that in high school.
I did too.
So guys, check out Heart of Darkness by Oscar Conrad or whatever.
Oh my God.
Yeah, Joseph Conrad.
Joseph Conrad.
Did you not take one literature course throughout all of like your education?
I'm sure I must have. Go to audibletrial.com/horrorversion for 30 days free and a book to get you started. This episode also brought to you by Nick B.
Hey, Nick B.
All right, so Nick B's fun fact is that it's his birthday this
Happy
week.
Happy birthday, Nick B. All right. But I will say this. We're recording on Nick B's birthday.
Right. Yeah,
this episode's going to come out way after your birthday.
A year later, so happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Not quite that far later, but yeah, later.
He's sad because his birthday's on a Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
You got to make the best of it, Nick B.
Well, happy birthday, Nick B.
Happy birthday, Nick B.
All right, it's time for another edition of Batshit Insane Crazy Patreon shoutouts.
Oh, buckle up.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, I'm back to stories because I like those better.
I liked them too. Let's bring them back.
All right, so Russell's a new person.
Uh-oh, Russell, hey, Russell.
Okay, so
Russell,
just to clarify.
Russell, the pirate formerly known as Matthew. Arr.
Yeah, so he wrote us, told us just to change his name to Russell because apparently that's the R. I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Russell and Michael went back in time with their ice cream Back to the Future car.
Right.
So they're,
on a Sunday?
Yeah, on a Sunday.
To get an ice cream Sunday.
They actually went back 100
years. 100 years?
To invent the first Jumanji box.
Oh, my God.
Russell made a pact with Satan.
Like you do.
And got the Jumanji Green Gym.
Right.
And they paid him.
That's one of the Infinity Stones, right?
Do you guys remember all those kids that were stuck making iPhones?
The phones?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They sacrificed them all to Satan to get the
stone. Wow. Wow. Okay.
Sorry, we had to wrap that one up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Put a nice little bow on that storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Cody Roy.
Yeah, the time cop.
Okay.
Was tricked into woodworking the Jumanji box.
Oh my God. Is his soul trapped in the woodworking Jumanji box?
No.
Oh.
He was commissioned by the devil.
Well, Russell and Michael.
Agents of the devil.
Right.
Semantics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pish posh.
But like, since it's like a pirate themed Jumanji, since Russell's a pirate, we're going to keep with that. So you get
Jumanji.
Are
you playing my favorite game?
But Cody Roy did get 30 pieces of silver for making the Jumanji box.
Oh my God.
Uh-oh.
And then Cody Roy's out of the store. He went back. He went and was like, all right, thanks for the job. He used the money to pay for time travel fuel.
Well, he didn't. He didn't know that it was an evil thing. He just went back in time and made a box. Yeah,
you think he knows now?
Yeah, he was tricked.
He'll know when the episode comes out.
Oh, okay.
So Matthew's umbrella, you know, Mary Poppins thing started like vibrating.
Ooh.
And that's what it does when it senses evil in time.
It's like Sting, Frodo's sword.
Yeah.
How it turns blue when there are orcs present.
Yeah, but it vibrates
when evil has happened.
Because there is a guy named Derek. He was the first victim of Jumanji. Wait,
how did it kill him? Did he get sucked into the game?
He gets sucked in.
So he was the first person to find the box and he like played. How did he die?
Well, he got sucked into the thing and then he got bitten by mosquitoes.
Oh.
And he caught malaria.
Oh.
And it was like a slow and painful death.
Oh, my God. Sad.
That is rough. Yeah.
I actually really like his shout out. That's gonna be fun.
Yeah.
All right. So Matthew, like his umbrella, goes back in time. He spins it really fast or whatever. Goes back in time,
like you do.
But he was too late because Jumanji the movies happened. So
wait, can I just ask? He has the power to go back in time, but he went back in time to a point where it was all.
Too late.
It's my story now.
It's always been your story, Mikey.
Satan imbued the power of time immortality and immunity into the Jumanji stone.
Right.
Okay.
The Infinity Stone.
So,
who's currently in possession of it?
Well, they buried it in the sand for the kid in Jumanji 1 to find it.
Okay.
So Matthew was too late. But luckily, his umbrella has a secret compartment for tissues.
Aww.
And these were sad tissues.
And they pop out automatically.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm too late.
Yeah. He pushes the too late button.
Ironically, the time traveling umbrella does not deliver tissues on time.
It doesn't take you back far enough, I guess.
No, that's right. Yeah. So there are some flaws in this technology.
Or loopholes.
Story.
In the story.
There's no loopholes.
Plot holes. Plot holes. Sorry.
Satan's magic has put Jumanji outside of the space-time continuum.
The events that go on in the board game of Jumanji don't happen in a space or time.
Right.
So
right.
you can't travel back to it.
You can't go to an alternate dimension. Tune in next week.
Yeah, tune in next week to see what happens with
all that stuff.
Everybody. Right?
So will they find the Jumanji stone?
Find out how Derek dies. Again.
Yeah. Again.
So check back next week when we find out what happens on the caper of the Jumanji box.
Oh.
This episode also brought to you by Rebecca.
Matthew R. Russell.
The pirate formerly known as Matthew R.
Right. Now goes by Russell, just to avoid confusion. And we appreciate that, Matthew R. / Russell. He has a, what I call, long distance dedication.
Oh, yeah.
Pickup line. Does that make us Delilah? Yeah. Delilah. Send a pickup. You ready, Mikey?
I'm ready. Russell has sent you, through the magic of Patreon power,
yes,
this pickup line. Hey, Rebecca, it's me, Russell.
Ooh.
If you were a fruit, you'd be a fine apple.
Because it rhymes with pineapple?
Yes, that's
pineapple
the joke.
Pineapple is really good.
It is really good. And if you want something that's really good, check out Rebecca's Etsy store at Straight On Tell Disney for all your Disney ear fetish needs.
No, just regular pineapple needs.
This episode also brought to you by Red.
So Red is scared of dice.
Dice? Oh, yeah. Like you shake it up and throw it out, dice? Yeah.
Because they're from the devil.
What are you, Bobby Boucher's mom?
I like casinos and boobies too.
Foosball is the devil.
Wow.
So anyway, Red was playing craps.
Right.
Uh-huh. He threw the dice.
Mm-hmm.
They bounced up, separated in the midair. And you know, most, there's like a lot of elderly people who play games at the casino because it's like
games of chance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those dice went into two different older fellas' mouths.
What? How?
Anyway, those two guys choked on dice and died.
He murdered two people.
Whoa. He was cleared of everything. There was footage. It was just an accident.
He was cleared of all manslaughter charges.
But his story was real dicey, guys.
Oh, yeah. It was very dicey.
So now if he sees dice, he passes out.
I would too.
No matter what number.
Well, Red, sorry you had that experience. Back to casinos, man. They can be fun. This episode also brought to you by
Ryan.
Ooh, you know what time that is, Ryan. It's time for
Jen to yell at Ryan.
Yeah, quote unquote Ryan.
So Ryan likes to go into people's office buildings and replace their dry erase markers with permanent markers.
Oh.
So then they write all over their boards. And you can't erase.
You can't erase that.
Sometimes if he can't find a permanent marker, though, he'll just take the tops off and let them dry out. And then sometimes he just steals them all. So you're in a meeting and you've got a big plan you got to put on the board. There are no markers.
Ryan, you can quote Jen on this. Yeah. You're a piece of shit.
Yeah.
I never said that.
She was talking about that.
I did write it on my whiteboard, though, and I can't erase it.
But that's on him. Yeah. Well, Ryan, stop stealing markers.
Yeah. What are you doing with those markers?
He's gaslighting teachers everywhere.
He is.
All right, here comes the theme music. It's going to go hide and we're going to find it. You guys have to count down.
Okay.
Okay, right. Ready?
Five, four, three, two, one. Ready or not, here we come.
Okay, so my friend who is in my office with me.
Your office mate.
My office mate, yes. Right. And my friend, and she's awesome, but she listens to the podcast.
Oh, that's awesome.
It is. But she looked at me the other day and she said, hey, Jim. And then without breaking eye contact, she took a big old sip of water and then swallowed two pills.
God dang it.
And then slammed her drink down.
This is the best ever.
Oh, no.
Welcome to the Horror Virgin, everybody.
Yes.
I'm Jim.
I'm Mikey.
And I'm the Horror Virgin, Todd, which means I don't like scary movies and you guys make me watch them. And I'm also water first, nerds. And this week, you guys made me watch what I assume is the spiritual sequel to Your Next, Ready or Not.
With a little Knives Out and Clue mixed in.
Have you guys seen this movie before?
No.
No, this is your first time? Ready or Not virgins today.
Nice. So what'd you guys think?
I liked it.
Yeah?
I did too. I loved it.
There were parts I liked and parts I hated.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about the ending, although I think I liked it more than you did.
Oh, no. The ending destroys this entire movie for me. This very much was Game of Thrones for me. I loved so much of it.
You shut
and then
your whore
the
mouth.
End of it shit the bed super hard for me.
No, this was nowhere near as bad as Game of Thrones.
I'm not ready to start talk about it.
I can't start that discussion. I'm in a good mood today.
She gets so angry.
I really liked the movie, and I liked the ending because the other way would have been hard to wrap up at the end.
Well, let's talk about the ending when we get to it.
it.
So, Jen, what did you think about it?
I loved it. I thought it was really fun. I think the aesthetic of it was really like fancy and mysterious, and I loved it. I thought it was like real dark comedy, which I really liked too. And Samara Weaving, who played Grace, was awesome in this movie.
Yeah,
she did a great job. I also love Adam Brody.
I do too.
And he did great in this.
This might be the thing I've liked him in the most.
Before we actually get into talking about the movie, I'd like to clarify that I loved this movie. It's the last 5 minutes that made the whole thing awful for me. But the whole movie is amazing, except for the last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So, Jen, let's get into this fucking movie.
All right. So we start with opening credits, and we see like a game board box and a shot of the devil that says La Baile's Gambit, I think is the title of it. So, I mean, we find out that La Baile is a character in the movie, kind of. I think one of the things that's great about this movie is when you rewatch it, you'd notice a lot more pieces falling into place because you know what's going to happen at the end. Like, they told us from the very opening scene that this guy is the devil and that they all have a pact.
Yeah. And I think we operate under the assumption here that people have either watched the movie before listening to the podcast or they are listening to the podcast and they're not going to ever watch the movie, right? So I think it's fine to say that La Baile is a character in this movie. He is the devil. We see him very briefly at the end. Talking about this movie as we go through it, they sort of telegraph it in a very sneaky way.
They do.
In this first scene, sort of plays out a lot of the events that play out throughout the whole movie very quickly, which I like. I thought that was cool.
Okay, and so then we're starting to see us pan through a Clue board game style mansion.
We come to find out that they are a family that like owns gaming type thing. Started out with playing cards, then board games. Now they own like
professional sports teams
or whatever. But it's like a hallway that honors their origin story, if that makes sense. So it's like old timey board games and playing cards and all this stuff. But it looks like it's from the 20s, like very, very old.
They're
stuff.
Very billionaires. They're like very not just millionaires.
And it's cool.
It's very cool. Yeah, this whole house, and this is very much a single location movie.
It is a single location movie.
But it's awesome. The single location's fucking rad. It's awesome.
Yeah, because it's gigantic, too.
Yes.
So we see two little boys who I'd say maybe seven, six-ish, 8 to 6, somewhere around there.
Yeah, they're not twins. They're probably 2 or 3 years apart, but
And so they're running through, and there's a man who's running and hiding, and he's asking them not to say where he is, and one of the boys, the taller boy, says...
Daniel.
Says,
well, that's Adam Brody's character. Well,
it is. It's a younger version of Adam Brody's character. So he says he's here and he tells everyone where this man that's been hiding, who's in a tuxedo also.
Right.
Yeah. And then he gets shot a couple of times with a crossbow with people who were wearing masks.
Yes.
Real creepy masks.
Yes.
And then they drag him off. And there's a woman in a wedding dress who's crying and screaming and saying, you don't have to do this. And she's got very short hair.
Yeah, she does.
And then the mom, who is Andie MacDowell, I don't know if we see her at this point.
We don't.
No.
But she goes down and she looks at the little boys and she says, I'm so proud of you.
Well, he also locked his little brother away so he didn't have to see it.
Oh, he did? I didn't see that. Yeah, so he's sticking up for his little brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Adam Brody is.
Yep, so that's how it starts, and then we see Ready or Not.
Oh, this is the credits. These credits were awesome because happens and explains
plot. Yeah, I loved these credits because the story progresses through the credits.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's all I ask for.
don't waste my time.
Yeah, don't waste my time. That's all I'm saying.
So, now we see Grace in her wedding dress. And
yes,
she's
we do.
Smoking and she's kind of, it sounds like she's kind of going through her vows, but I think she's being a little sarcastic.
Yeah.
She's saying, we find out that the family doesn't really like her, but that they've got a ton of money.
Yes.
And so then the groom comes in, who is Alex.
And this is where we find out that Alex is sort of a little bit estranged from the family.
Yeah.
But over the course of a year and a half, he fell in love with Grace. And she sort of encouraged him to rekindle his relationship with his family because she's adopted. She was just in foster care. She wasn't even adopted.
Right.
She just really longs for a family and to have a permanent family. So
yeah,
she sort of rekindled their relationship.
Right.
And we also learned that they had to get married there. Mm-hmm. Like, we learned a bunch of stuff here. Also that Alex doesn't really like his family that much.
Right.
Like, for whatever reason, doesn't like them, is a little uncomfortable with having the wedding there, and just is not super happy.
Right. Things that don't sound super weird on the surface, but we're going to find out why he's all upset about it.
Right. If I had not seen the trailer for this yet, I'd be like, why is he so upset?
Well, they do some weird banter that doesn't sound very authentic.
Oh, I thought it was sweet.
I thought it made sense if you understand that he knows there's a chance he might have to hunt down and murder his wife tonight.
Right.
Well, and then he never told her. I thought Alex was a bad dude from the jump.
Yeah, he is a bad dude from the jump.
Yeah.
Even if he helped her escape and like got her to safety and saved at her, he's still a bad dude.
Yeah.
Because you tell that woman on like the third date, hey, if this gets serious and we get married, then there's a chance my family and I will kill you.
Yeah. Hunt you down and kill you.
There's a loophole in this movie.
Just one?
Well, there's a couple.
Yeah.
But like, what if he had like a kid out of wedlock?
Yeah. Later in the movie, he says, I either had to propose to you or you would leave or we end up here. Right. So either way, I was going to lose you. No. What you do when she says, hey, if we don't get married, I'm going to leave you. You sit her down and very calmly explain to her that if we get married, there's a curse on our family that you might get murdered by all of us.
Right.
I think she might leave.
Right. I think she might leave or she might stay and just you guys live in sin, as it were. Which they already were living together. Okay, she mentions that.
If they broke the curse, would the kid out of wedlock explode?
Probably.
They might not even have his last name.
I don't think the kid would have been able to be born.
So like, he had free birth control the whole time?
Oh my God. Man. He had it figured out and gave it up.
Why did he do it?
So dumb.
Anyways, so now Adam Brody comes in and he's kind of asking, are you sure you want to do this? And it sounds a little bit kind of off. Like,
it is off.
We're about to go get married. Yeah. Yes, I want to do this. But the brother, Alex, says, I'm giving you an out right now.
Yeah, because he knows they might have to murder her
later. Exactly.
Like, I understand how if you've never seen a trailer for this, that might seem off. If you've seen the trailer, you completely understand what's happening here.
Right. Yeah.
Which is, so it didn't bother me at all.
Oh, no, not at all. No, I'm just saying, like, I was trying to put myself in her shoes and I would be like, what would I be thinking if my future husband was saying this to me right now?
I'll definitely say it to my future wife.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Believe me, you need this out. And if you don't take it, that means you're dumb enough to be
with me. Are you absolutely sure? Like, this is your out. Like, don't disappoint me.
Listen, if I were in your shoes, I would not marry me. So I get it. I do like here that he is... Like, they're about to walk down the aisle together, and he can see his wife in her wedding dress before they get married. The next scene is them taking photos together before the wedding, which I loved. I thought that was great.
But look, how unlucky was it? I mean, their whole family died.
That's the truth. He should have waited.
Yeah. All right, listen, that's fair. Maybe that's why they got the hide-and-seek card.
So they're all outside taking pictures.
Yes, and this is when the credits is going on.
Yeah, it is. And this is kind of where we get a little bit of the, we start to see some of the relationships, and we're introducing ourselves to the characters.
We 100% meet every key player here. We even see the three housemaids.
We do, yeah.
So we meet everyone in the movie in this intro scene.
Mm-hmm. So we meet the dad, the brother, and the brother is Adam Brody saying they're just all trying to find out if you're a gold digging whore like my wife. And then we cut over to her.
He's so good.
He's so good.
Adam Brody's really comedic timing is solid.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got to watch The O.C., Todd.
I will not ever watch The O.C.
Ooh.
There's nothing about that show that looks appealing to me.
That's a personal attack.
But so, and then we also see Evil Aunt, who's wearing purple and has white hair and the best eye makeup.
She's amazing.
I love her. I want to be her when I'm old.
What? She mean mugs the wife the whole time.
Yeah, honestly, I could 100% see Jen slowly becoming this over the next 50 years. Yeah.
I mean, I do see it. I just say, don't do it.
I don't think it should be a goal, but I see it as a possibility, yeah. But she says nothing in this scene, but you completely understand her character by just the way she looks, and it's amazing.
It is amazing. Maybe my favorite part of the movie. Anyways, so we're also talking to Andy McDowell, who is Alex's mother.
Right, and she's pulled the bride aside, Grace, to talk to her. And she actually says, you know, thank you so much for bringing Alex back into our lives. I really like you. I'm really looking forward to being a part of this family with you. Mm-hmm. Like, saying some very supportive, about to be your mother-in-law stuff.
I love Annie McDowell.
She's great, man. Mm-hmm. She really is.
Groundhog Day made me fall in love.
Aw. Yeah.
And she's great in this movie, too.
So it's the wedding, and it's at this estate, which is just this gigantic house with this really cool pool that I don't even think is a swimming pool.
It's not.
I think it's a gigantic fountain.
It is.
Okay, so now it's the wedding night, and they're about to get down.
Well, they've already gotten married.
Yes, they have already gotten married.
They do show that. Mm-hmm. It's very quick.
And so now, yeah.
So is the wedding night.
Yeah.
I mean, it is because they don't even get,
they don't consummate the marriage.
They don't.
Rule number one, don't stay where your family and in-laws are staying on your wedding night.
Yeah, you don't want to have your wedding night in the room you grew up in.
Even if it's wood paneling.
Like, look, I loved koala bears when I was a kid. And they just never took them down.
Yeah. My parents never redecorated. This is not on me, although it's all mine.
That's God's truth. I grew up with a room full of koala bears.
Why?
Yeah, I liked them. It was very manly and tasteful.
Was it?
Yeah. It was like dark green. It was like
I have a quick
bears.
Question. Did the koala bears have like insignias on their stomach?
No, they weren't Care Bears. They weren't Care Bears. It was koala bears.
Koala bears can stare too, Mikey. Mm.
Anyway, so they're on the bed making out. Mm-hmm. And Grace is under the impression that they're about to consummate their marriage.
Right.
And then Alex is trying to slow her down and stop her. Mm-hmm. And maybe because he sees that the aunt has orbed up on them.
Creepy aunt. You'll have to hide better than that. I love
And then Alex is like, we're not even hiding now.
Exactly.
What are you talking about?
But she says everybody's waiting downstairs.
Yes. Yeah. And then this is when Alex is like, oh, hey.
Oh, hey.
Not a big deal, mm-hmm. but on our wedding night at midnight, you have to play a game.
Right.
It's part of the family because we're a gaming
You pick a card, and sometimes mm-hmm. it's chess, sometimes it's badminton. You just have to pick whatever games on the card. Because we're like a gaming. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it's fine. And it's something we do when a new person joins the family. It's part of the initiation.
Yeah, they like it. It's more important to them than the wedding.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then Grace asks, do I have to win? And he's like, no, don't worry about it. It's just you got to play a game. Which honestly sounds like a fun little tradition. Especially sort of if your family comes from a gaming empire that started with like board games and shit like that.
At the reception.
Yeah, yeah, I was just going to say.
Oh, not at midnight. Yeah. No, but like at the reception would be a lot of fun. Like the dad comes out and was like, we're playing Twister or whatever.
It would be cool if it was like, this is the first board game we met. It's like 100 years old. We made it.
Yeah.
And we're going to play it. It'd be super family tradition.
Yeah, that would be fun. But then you don't get to murder people. So,
right,
you know,
exactly.
Tomato, tomato.
Not just you don't get to murder, you don't get to hunt people. And that's half the fun. All right.
What board game do you guys play with your families, like traditionally?
Trivial Pursuit was ours.
Trivial Pursuit is our family's one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we still do it. Big competitions, yeah.
We play Cards Against Humanity.
That's like
your
traditional family game?
Almost every Christmas when we actually get together for Christmas, we play Cards Against Humanity.
So now they're all down in the gaming foyer.
Yeah, they have a room for this.
Exactly.
It's awesome.
A foyer.
It's a locked room and they're like, only the family's allowed in.
Yes. Well, actually, we don't go into that room yet. They're sort of hanging out in like a room around.
A parlor.
Yeah, sort of a parlor.
The vestibule for the gaming room.
This is where the butler is playing the piano?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, with gloves on, which has got to be difficult. Yeah. I can't play piano ungloved, but...
You got to go through special butler training.
You
got to
be safe.
Though.
Yeah, listen, you don't know where that piano's been.
You got to glove up.
It probably hasn't been very many places because pianos are real big.
You don't want a baby piano.
No, you don't want a baby piano on your hands.
No.
Especially not a baby grand.
Oh. It'll cost you more than that.
It's a lot of trouble. All right. You got to tune it. She's talking to the mom and this is... Oh, geez. She's talking to the mom. Grace is talking to the mom, Andy McDowell. And this is where we find out she grew up in the foster system.
Yeah.
And that Alex has been distant. And the mom says she likes her a lot.
Yeah.
And then, and she said, finally, one of my children brought home a good one, which is rich person shade.
It is. But in this scene, we meet all the other people that the other siblings brought home.
Right.
And they're not great.
No, they're not. Yeah.
So we meet Adam Brody's wife, whose name escapes me.
Charity.
Charity.
Charity, yeah.
And Adam Brody's like half.
Middle name, Irony.
Yeah. And Adam Brody's like half drunk the whole movie because he hates his family
and hates his wife, it seems.
And doesn't want to murder people.
And doesn't I really connect with him.
And honestly, his wife seems to hate him and really loves money.
She's like a super mean version of Olivia Wilde.
She's sort of, like in look and sort of vibe, She has that intensity that Olivia Wilde has, but Olivia Wilde, I think, is
great. Everyone was super attractive in this movie.
Well, yeah, because they're rich.
So let's talk about Fitz. And what is the daughter's
name?
This is
when we meet Fitz. Emily.
Emily. So Emily is like Adam Brody's sister, and her husband is Fitz.
Yeah.
And none
is.
Of his clothes do.
Ooh.
So this is where we meet Fitz, Emily's wife, and Emily is Adam Brody's brother.
Yeah.
Sister. Sorry, excuse me.
They couldn't get their charter out of LaGuardia.
Oh, yeah.
Also, she had cocaine on her face.
Yes, and they're complaining about not catching a charter flight out of LaGuardia or whatever. Uh-huh. I just can't fly commercial. You know what I'm saying?
Like a Philistine.
Yeah. Mm. So we hate them immediately because I hate rich people like this.
Well, and one of their kids comes running in with one of those masks that we saw in the beginning.
Fitz and Emily have two kids.
Yeah. And Adam Brody goes from 1 to 11 real quick and says, get the fuck out of here with that mask. Which, understandable.
Yes.
But then Fitz is like, no, you can keep playing.
It seems like Adam Brody's character, the one who told on the guy in the beginning and the guy got killed.
Yes.
That really formed him as a person of a self-hating.
Yeah. It was a seminal moment. For sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But because Adam Brody has so convincingly played assholes in movies that I saw, I just expected him to be an evil person, you know? And I was like, he's going to have a
turn. I think
you
sort of expect everyone to be evil.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not me. I said, he's going to be a good guy.
Yeah, you called it early on.
But it was nice debating with you guys throughout the movie if he's going to be good or bad.
Oh, and this is when the aunt says, my favorite line in this, any movie. This
to
may
Emily.
Be, yeah, to yeah. Emily. She says, brown-haired niece, you continue to exist. It's amazing because she looks like Cruella de Vil and Ursula shrunk down into an evil miniature.
Yes.
And she's just seething with hatred and evil the whole time. And I love it.
She is great. And I do love that she said brown haired niece because she qualifies which niece she is, but she only has one niece.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So there's no need for a qualifier on what niece she is. She like just drills it down to like, I don't even care who you are to me.
Right.
Honestly, she reminded me of my grandmother.
So she's amazing. And so now they go into the gaming room and we get kind of the game exposition dump.
Yeah. And it seems very innocent. Very
is this
fun.
The secret room?
Yes.
Yes.
The one that only the family members can go into.
So they go into the secret game room and there's weapons all over the walls.
Yes.
And like game that they have killed.
It's very Jumanji.
It is very Jumanji.
It's like Jumanji Clue.
Yes.
Yeah. So they sit down at this big sort of, is it a circular table? Mm-hmm.
Table.
But there's a seat at the head that's very fancy that nobody sits at.
Right. And then the dad gets out this awesome old wooden box and starts explaining what the thing is that we'll probably have Jen explain.
Yeah.
As he's handing this box around to everyone.
Their great-great-grandfather made a Faustian bargain with this guy on a boat where like if he solved the puzzle box, they would have money forever or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, they made a deal with the devil.
Yeah.
So the great-grandfather opened a Civil War trading card company, and then they expanded into sporting goods. But it's like someone's been watching over us, and they had a generous benefactor. And the old great-grandfather used to do excursions abroad, and he met someone named Mr. LaBelle. And Mr. LaBelle gave him this puzzle box, and he said, if you can solve this by the time the ship gets into port, then I'll finance anything you want. But now, whenever you have a new addition, Mr. Bale will decide if they stay or go.
Right. So now they have to do this ritual with every new member of the family.
Right. And it's what you were saying.
So what they do is they put one single blank card into the box, close the box, and then give the box to the new member of the family.
It pops out.
And it prints out on that blank card what game they have to play. It's like a it's like a very small printer.
Yeah, like a die cut.
So you put in your blank sheet of paper, which is a card, and then when you open it, it tells you what game you play. And this is where we find that Fitz, Emily's husband, played Old Maid, which I didn't even know that was a thing. I don't know what that is, but
it's a card game. It's
okay.
A card game.
Okay. Yeah. And then Charity played
chess.
It was chess. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then somebody played Fetch or something.
Do they have a dog to the family?
Somebody said Fetch.
So the box is like a 3D printer.
It is.
But
the
D's the devil.
And you have to but you have to make sure you have the right printer connection or it'll just print to another box rich house. And you just start walking all over your mansion trying to find your card.
So confusing.
And the cartridge ink for your devil box is like even more expensive than the devil box itself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's the worst. Yeah. You have to send your butler to Office Max to go get you devil cartridge paper and devil cartridge ink. It's a fucking nightmare, honestly.
Yeah.
And it's Wi-Fi only because there's no connection port to that. It's a nightmare.
Right.
Anyway, so she prints out or the card gets printed out and she pulls it out and it says hide and seek.
I hide and seek her beautiful giant blue eyes.
She is very cute.
I love her.
She's got great eyes.
Mm-hmm. I'll do brown eyes if I like a girl.
What are you, Van Morrison? Anyway, so she is like, oh, cool. We're going to play hide and seek. How does that work? Do I hide and one person comes try to find me? And everyone in the room, their eyes are like super big. Ooh. They're like, oh, fuck, are we doing this?
Yeah, they're doing this.
But they don't tell her that they're going to hunt her. What they tell her is, oh, no, you're just going to go somewhere in the house and hide.
Mm-hmm.
We'll turn off the cameras, and then we'll just play a game of hide and seek.
Yeah,
it'll be fun.
It's fine. Yeah, but before they do that, she raises a toast to Mr. LaBelle.
Yeah, and everyone drinks except for Alex.
Alex is a super big douchebag.
Well, kind of. Yeah.
I think Alex at this point still wants to get her out of there and protect her.
I think so too. And I think he still thinks that he's going to be able to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he thinks he's a good guy.
But he's a rich white dude. He will always think he's a good dude.
Yep.
Ugh.
Full stop.
Part of the point of this movie, I think.
No, it's not. We'll get to that.
Should be part of the point
of
the movie.
It should
be. Yeah. All right. So the rules are simple. We say she can hide anywhere in the house. They're going to count to 100. Yeah, we already said that.
And she has to hide till sunrise.
Yes. Yeah.
And I mean, but in her mind, she's like, whatever, just come get me and then the game will be over and I can go fuck my husband and we can go to sleep.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I can just, this will be our weird story we tell.
Yeah, because she doesn't know the stakes, right?
Right,
she just knows they're going to play a game.
If this was like a real movie, everyone would be shit-faced from the reception.
Adam Brody is drunk all night.
Yep. Well, yeah. I'd be Adam Brody.
Yeah.
He'd be lucky if he was half as handsome as you.
Oh. So they put on the hide-and-seek song, and it is super creepy.
I loved it, though.
I did,
it's
too.
Great.
It was just the perfect tone for this movie, yes. too, you know, because it's like old kind of nostalgia, a little bit creepy, but kind of playful kind of yeah. thing, you know?
And yeah. they're rich people, so they don't want to count on to 100 themselves.
Exactly. No. They have their record count for them, yeah. which I love.
I honestly thought they were going to have their butler count 100, sir. 99, sir.
Pip, pip, cheerio. And everyone, like, whenever they get to like 75, someone's like, yes, quite, quite.
But, and by the way, butler of the year, that guy.
Yeah,
he
man.
Goes above and beyond mm-hmm. for that family.
The maids, too. I don't know what they're yeah. paying their help, but like, to go around with your deal with the devil, it's got to be a lot.
Yeah, yeah. probably a
what
lot.
What is the deal with the devil clause in their contract?
You know their NDA is like stoneclad.
Oh, yeah.
Ironclad, even
there's
stonier.
There's a stoneclad.
All right, so she goes off and hides during yep. the record playing. She gets in a dumbwaiter.
She does.
And you've probably seen this scene in the trailer, or mm-hmm. when you watch the movie, it's her closing the dumbwaiter, mm-hmm. which was very cool.
She also is taking off her super high heels, which is a very smart
yes.
thing. But while she's doing that, the father is handing them all out weapons.
Right.
And the juxtaposition of the song playing and them getting all these old weapons is just amazing, and well, I love it so much.
Them getting deadly-ass weapons uh-huh. and her just like playfully walking down the hallway mm-hmm. looking for a place to hide for 3 minutes till they find her.
Exactly. Because yeah. we got like a super awesome axe that Aunt gets.
Yeah. And she knows how to use it.
Exactly.
A double-handed axe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's insane. Not so, a hand axe.
Right. No. Double-handed axe. So somebody gets a crossbow. The mom.
Fitz gets the crossbow. Like an idiot.
He totally knows how to use it, right?
No, he doesn't.
The mom gets a bow and arrow.
Yes.
And I didn't write what they all got down.
Brody gets a rifle.
Mm-hmm. A few of them get guns.
Yeah. yeah. Emily, the daughter, gets an old revolver.
Yes.
That's her weapon. Yeah. But it's really cool. And so as the song ends, they're all just standing in line with their weapons, getting ready to go.
Oh, and Alex is not participating.
No.
He sits
on the couch.
Yeah. He does. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so now Grace is hiding and she's just kind of talking to herself. She's like, fuck, I thought I would be fucking my husband right now.
Yeah. Now I'm just sitting in a dumbwaiter.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm supposed to do this until the sun comes up. This sucks. Fitz and the mom are walking down. They're talking about how long this usually takes. And the mom says it's only happened once since she joined the family, which was the scene we saw at the very beginning.
Right.
So I kind of understand, like, you don't think this is actually going to happen, and enough of them have gotten married and they've seen it not happen.
Yeah.
I guess you could tell yourself it's an acceptable risk. It's not, but I also see, like, if you're a son that's born into this family or a child that's born into the family, what are you going to do?
Oh, Adam already talks about that.
Right.
I mean, and I agree with him when he says, like, if it's the family you were born into, it makes it seem weird. It's like people who are born into cults, they grow up thinking that that's normal. And then when they encounter exactly. the real world, they're like, oh, none of this shit's normal. Right. I've got to get out of Mormonism.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, that was just my personal journey.
Hot take on this movie. Right. It's only happened twice in 30 years because the creepy aunt makes a thing like he was a good man, the only man I've ever loved. And then Grace is a good person. I think the game only happens to good people. And that's why all their spouses suck so much.
Could be.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
So, like,
so they have to decide whether they're going to murder this good person. And that's what's ultimately like sealing the deal with the
devil. Right. And they're cursed to only marry like kind of like not great people.
And they only marry shitty people.
Yeah.
So that's
charity and Fitz are the worst.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
Right. So she's in the dumbwaiter and she gets out and she catches her dress on something. And this begins the awesomification of this beautiful wedding dress.
She rips it a little bit.
She does.
As
yeah.
she gets out of it. She's like, ah, shit, my dress.
My dress, yeah.
Like, that's the worst thing that's going to happen to it that night.
So now one of the maids has been reading stories to the two children, and now one of them has wandered off. So she's looking around, and these maids are wearing these, like, super tight black cocktail dresses, too.
Yes.
So she's looking, and Grace is hiding from her, and then she gets grabbed from behind, but not so fast. It's the husband. It's Alex, and he's trying to help her.
Yeah, and he drags her to their room.
Mm-hmm. So they're just hiding in front of the bed, like, getting down. She's like, I'm not sure what's going on, but I'm just kind of playing along. And then the maid wanders in.
That's right.
And accidentally gets shot in the head from Emily, who's just kind of terrible.
Well, she's high on coke.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
She's like all hopped up on cocaine and shoots the maid in the face.
Yeah, right. I found her.
Yeah. And then she runs in and she's like, oh shit, this is not her.
Right.
And then this is when you see Grace peek around the bed and she's mm-hmm. like, oh my God, they're trying to kill
me? Exactly, which is really lucky for her.
Yeah.
Because she immediately understands what the stakes of this
is. Well, Alex was going to tell her.
He was, but she's, but I mean, I could also see not taking that seriously.
Right. Yeah. Know? I mean, the dead body does drive the point home.
It really does. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, and the banter with this family too is really funny because one of them was like, well, she's not a person dressed in white. What were you thinking?
Yeah.
And they're also asking,
does that count?
Does it count? If it's just, if it's the help, does it count? The aunt is emphatic that it does not count.
Right, because she lost a husband to it.
You're right.
So yeah, she's like, if we're going to do this, we're going to fucking do this right.
Exactly. Well, and we also find out she has to be alive for the ritual.
Right.
You're supposed to just maim her.
Yeah, shoot for the center of gravity.
Right. And the next thing that happens, happens a couple of times in the movie. They flip a coin to see who's going to carry the head and the legs.
Because their fortune and their lives are driven by games of chance.
Right,
that's why
right.
they do shit like this, which I liked. I thought it was a cool character choice.
I thought it was a nice little choice, especially when Adam Brody was like, I don't fucking care and just grabbed it. Yeah. You know? I thought it was interesting.
But at this point, they flip a coin and they call heads or tails, and whoever loses has to take the heavier side, which is the head.
Right, right.
In case you have to move a body, always go leg, not head.
Yeah.
Why?
Because the head side's the heavier side.
Oh, the torso's heavier than the leg.
Yeah.
So now Grace is kind of starting to figure it out, and because Alex is telling her. And Alex tells her she pulled the one bad card that you're not supposed to. But I think you're right. I think it's because she's a good person.
It is.
Yeah.
And they all think they have to kill her before sunrise. And so then Emily comes in to do some more coke in the mirror and say, you got this, girl, you're a winner. And it's really funny.
It is very funny because she has a coke mustache.
Uh-huh.
She looks like a powdered milk ad.
So now they're back in. We've seen previously Alex walking through like a mystery secret passageway.
Well, that's how we got from the family only game start room, mm-hmm. right? That's how we got from that couch up to the bedroom where he met Grace.
Yeah. But so he went through, he got into the conservatory, so he was able to go through the secret tunnel.
Yeah.
And he's saying, put your shoes on, put these tennis shoes on.
Yeah,
right,
put
now
your chucks on.
Mm-hmm, which is awesome.
I love them. They're yellow chucks. Yeah, they're great.
And he tells her he had to play along so he could help her. And she's saying she should have told him. She's getting really angry that he didn't tell any of this shit to
justifiably
her.
So.
Exactly.
Yeah. And this is when he says, well, if I had told you, you would have left. Mm-hmm. And if I hadn't married you, you would have left.
Right.
And I'm a super selfish, white, mm-hmm. rich asshole. So what do you think I did?
A woman deserves that choice, though.
Yeah.
A person does.
She does.
I agree, Mikey. I'm not saying he's a good dude.
He's a horrible
guy.
If he had lost the relationship, I guess he'd just have to console himself with his millions of dollars and everything
billions.
He owns.
Billions.
Mm-hmm. And I'll say this. This scene is what makes me know he was wanting her to survive until she says or doesn't answer his question in the almost last scene mm-hmm. where you're going to leave me after this, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because once she didn't answer, he knew the answer was no, and he was going to lose her anyway.
Right.
But if you truly love something, you have to let it go.
Yeah. It won't come back. But honestly, mm-hmm. that's good. It's good for you if it doesn't come back.
Right. If it's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Well, and before he's telling her that stuff, he says, and you're the one that wanted to get married.
Yeah. This is your fault.
And she's like, what the fuck? I didn't know. And I love that moment.
Yeah. I mean, that was. Ugh.
Mm-hmm.
She's a badass, man.
She's cool.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. So he gives her instructions to get to the kitchen.
He has a plan. He's going to go to the security room, unlock the doors. He's like, wait in the kitchen, I'll unlock the doors. You're going to get out.
And
right.
She takes this time to rip the bottom of her wedding dress off, which, again, awesome.
Yes. But she goes down the secret passage hallway and forgets whether to go left and right.
Uh-huh.
And you see her sort of look left and right. There are two similar doors and she just goes, shit, or whatever, because she forgot.
Right.
And then it cuts to Adam Brody and the dad and the mom carrying the maid down the hallway and they're talking. And I love that Adam Brody's like, she could be anywhere. There's nowhere we're going to find her. And the parents are like, yeah, it's going to be very difficult for us to find her at this point because she knows we're trying to kill her.
Right.
And then she opens the door that's right behind where they just walked past.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, found her.
Right.
I love that moment.
I do too. That was really fun.
And this starts like some badass shit.
It
because
really
Emily, the coked up daughter, comes out and pulls her revolver and shoots at Grace.
Like four times.
Yeah, like four times.
Fumbling it in her hand.
Well, because she's super high on cocaine.
And probably doesn't really know how to operate that weapon.
That could be true, too. Yeah. She's used to having her butler shoot for her.
Exactly.
So anyway, but Grace has obviously seen The Irishman and knows that you close on someone who is shooting at you. You run away from a knife. So she runs towards Emily and like knocks the gun down and Emily shoots the floor with the last bullet, mm-hmm. and then she continues to run past her.
Right, and she gets out. She gets to safety for that moment.
Yes.
And meanwhile, while a lot of this is happening, we're cutting to Fitz, who's in the bathroom, and he's looking at a video on his phone.
I actually asked, is he watching porn?
Right.
Because he's sitting on the toilet, like, and he's illuminated by the warm glow of his phone screen.
Yeah.
But he's watching a tutorial video of how to use a crossbow.
Right. It's so funny.
Your crossbow and you, I think it's what it's called. Yeah.
And it's like two guys in vests. One of them has the exact same crossbow he's holding. Let's get to know your crossbow. Right. I thought that shit was hilarious.
Yeah, so now she has escaped.
Yeah, she blew past Emily, who was shooting at her. Yeah,
and she gets into a room, and she's hiding right next to a door. And it opens, and Adam Brody just walks in, and they're both like,
And he goes, I only wanted a drink.
Exactly.
So he walks past her to get a drink.
Yeah.
And I was like, I knew he was good.
Right. Because he says, I have to call the others. I don't want to, but I don't want to be the one to serve you up. And I'm really sorry. So I'm going to give you a 10-second head start.
He actually offers her the drink, too, which I thought was nice.
Miserable.
He really does. Yeah.
He does a great job in this movie.
He's amazing.
I think he sucked in The OC. He was so bad. That show sucks.
And you watched it so many times that you're an authority on it too, right?
But he does a great job in this movie.
He is. Yeah, he's great. And it was nice to see him play a different kind of character.
It was. It was. Yeah. But I honestly think because he's played so many assholes in the past, it makes you think like he's gonna be an asshole.
Right.
So it's almost a twist that he's not.
But so he gives him her a 10-second start and she runs and then he yells, she's in the study.
Which is actually where he is, which I think is another nice thing because he could have said she's leaving the study or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But they all come to him and he's just sitting down drinking his drink.
He's like, oh, I guess you're too late.
Yeah, I guess she left or whatever.
And so then his wife Charity walks in.
Yeah.
And we find out, I think, to your point, I really like that, that like this is why she wasn't chosen to be the sacrifice because she was on board immediately.
Yeah, she hates being poor, and she will do anything to stay rich.
Right.
She even says, I think in this scene, you know what I came from. I'd rather be dead than go back.
And he's like, when I told you, you just didn't even react.
Exactly. Yeah. You couldn't wait to sign up.
Right.
Yeah. I loved her character and it really fascinated me, especially when you compare her to Grace.
Yeah. You liked her?
I did. I mean, I thought she was interesting.
A good villain.
I wasn't rooting for her.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I got you. Got you. Got you.
Because, I mean, she's going to be that aunt in like 20 years. Or
she's not going to be that aunt.
She's not going to anymore.
No, she would never have been that aunt because her husband did not try to marry into the family and didn't get killed.
You're right.
That aunt is insane because she was going to marry a great dude and then her family murdered him and she had to stick along with it because she loved money more than she loved that man.
True.
She had to tell herself some insane shit to make herself okay with what happened to her.
Exactly.
And her husband.
And that she basically caused the death of the person she loved.
Yeah. And because she had to justify all that shit to herself, she's like the rule keeper of the game because it matters to her.
It does because she had to pay that price so other people aren't going to get off.
And she was not married again.
No, she wasn't because, I mean, I wouldn't do that to somebody else. So they're all in the study and they're talking about Claire and they keep talking about this maid Claire who's dead and everybody keeps saying, oh, she was my favorite.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. So Emily forgot her gun. And she runs in and she gets Fitz's, who's her husband's, crossbow and then accidentally shoots the other maid through the head.
Yeah, shoots her in the face.
Mm-hmm. It reminded me of that scene in Clue, the singing telegram part.
Like, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Although the maid is not singing and she gets shot with a crossbow in the fucking face.
In the mouth.
Yeah, it's rough.
It's really sad.
I do love that throughout the rest of the scene, you hear her like in the corner like, and then the aunt goes over with her two-handed axe.
She kept getting interrupted by this dying gurgling.
So she walks over there and cuts her head off.
Yeah.
As you do.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I love it so much. Yeah. And so somebody was like, well, let's see if we can go find the other one that's still alive to clean it up.
Yeah. I mean, because they are the quintessential worst rich white family ever.
They are. They're the toxic 1%.
Yep.
And so they're talking about what to do now. And she's like, well, she keeps taking us out. I think she's seen your next and she's learned some survival skills.
Yeah, she knows what's up.
And so the mom's like, well, let's just use the cameras because we've got this weapon. And even though it's not.
The Grace hasn't hurt anybody.
Oh, no, she hasn't.
She eventually hurts some people, but she doesn't kill anyone.
Yeah, Emily's killed both of those maids.
Yes.
Yeah. So mom wants to turn the cameras on and the aunt is getting really mad and saying you have to respect tradition and that if we don't find her before sunrise we're all gonna die.
Yeah,
but they do decide to turn the cameras on and so then Grace gets into the gaming room and she grabs the big elephant gun. And then she has a moment where she looks at herself in the mirror. She's looking pretty awesome. But she seems to be kind of upset by it. She doesn't seem like, she's not like, oh yeah, I'm Sarah Connor now. Boom, boom, boom.
No, she's like, I hate this.
Yeah,
I think she even says, shit.
Yeah, this is not what I wanted my wedding night to be. Yeah. And look what happened to my dress.
And if she actually has to fire that elephant gun, it's going to break her shoulder in half. And eviscerate anyone it hits.
All this is going on while they're still trying to do the original plan. She's trying to find the kitchen. Alex is in the security room trying to unlock the doors and turn the security cameras on anyway.
Right, because not only have they turned the cameras off, they've locked down the house too.
Right, Alex is trying to turn the security cameras on to help get her out of the house.
Yes.
Right. And make sure she's safe, right?
Yes.
So he does get the cameras on, he sees her in the kitchen, mm-hmm. and it's just her in there with the butler who's making some tea.
And whistling 1812 Overture.
Yes, they have a lot of great symphony music in this.
They really do.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
And so there's this really tense scene with the butler in the island, and it reminded me of the kitchen scene in Jurassic Park too. You're kind of just creeping around trying not to be seen.
Except instead of a dinosaur,
it's a butler. Yeah, but he is pretty old.
And she is a clever girl.
She is.
Hold on to your butts. It's going to get crazy. Let's do this.
So she opens and she keeps making sounds when she's unloading or she's opening up the elephant gun to put the things in. But the butler sometimes hears it and then kind of dismisses it.
Well, he hears it and then goes and walks to where she was and she's no longer there. She had slid across so she couldn't see her.
She Jurassic Parked out of the way.
Yeah, so he was like, I must be hearing things or whatever.
Right, and I got my tea on. Yeah. And this is the best part of the symphony. But so she goes over to the door. I think maybe she hears the doors unlocking or something. Grace points the gun at his back and turns around and he's just all smarmy butler at her and she pulls the trigger and it doesn't fire.
The butler says, the ammunition is display only.
Yes. We couldn't make it that easy.
Like just hits him in the face with a gun.
Well, in all fairness, she says move.
Yeah.
And then he goes to attack her. Like,
right.
She didn't want to attack him. Right. She just defends herself.
I would have just shot him immediately.
Well, she tried to shoot him immediately. I get that.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. But she smashes him with the tea.
Yeah. And the kettle breaks over his face and burns like half of his face. Mm-hmm. He becomes Two-Face.
So then Alex says, fuck this, and just smashes all the control panels with a fire extinguisher.
Well, he says fuck this because his family's trying to get in there. They know he's in there. So he breaks all the cameras so they don't work, so they can't use him against her.
Right. And then he starts choking his dad because he's had enough of this.
And Daniel, Adam Brody, goes like, you don't have to do this, man. You don't, I mean, or you can. Or you don't have to.
Right. But I'm kind of drunk, so, you know.
Yeah.
And then the dad hits Alex over the head and knocks him out.
Right.
Yeah. Alex decides not to kill his dad, and then Alex's dad fucks him up.
And asks Daniel what side he's on. So now she finds the last remaining maid in the dumbwaiter, stole her spot. The maid's like, what the fuck is going on? I'm not even really a maid. The dad just likes how I dance.
Which is dirty.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, and so Grace says, they're not looking for you. And so the maid immediately sells her out. And says,
well, she says
here.
You're not looking. They're not looking for you. They're looking for me.
Uh-huh.
So get out of the dumbwaiter so I can get into it and hide.
Right.
And then the maid's like, she's over here.
Exactly. You got to stick with your sisters, man.
Yeah, man.
But she gets karma almost immediately because she's sticking out of the dumbwaiter to try to get out of it. And somehow Grace
doesn't hit the button. It's the maid that hits the button.
Yeah, her foot does inside because she's struggling.
Yeah.
It's karma.
It is.
And so she gets dumbwaitered in half.
Well, it's now a dumb maid, not
dumb
a dumb
mistress.
Waiter. Yeah. So she gets squished by the dumbwaiter, and then she's just hanging half out with blood like spilling out of her mouth.
Right.
And then Grace just runs away because there's nothing she can do.
Right.
And when the final maid dies, who cleans up the mess?
I know. Well, the butler's still kicking.
The butler
kicking.
Does.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
Maybe
that's why he's wearing gloves this entire movie.
Then you just go hire some more dancers. I mean, maids.
Right.
Right. Wangy blangy.
That's why they're so attractive.
Yeah, it is. That's what the implication was.
Because he can't get anybody pregnant unless they're in the family.
Loophole.
Ooh.
Yes.
So now dad is handcuffing Alex to the bed.
Yeah.
And the butler's telling them all the maids are dead. This is when they're mad that she's taking them all out. Although you're right. She hasn't killed anybody.
Yeah. And at this point, we also see the window in that room is open. And it reveals that Grace is right outside the window listening.
Yeah. And this is when we find out the aunt is talking about how Alex lost his way. And she feels like she has a connection to him because she was the woman from the very beginning whose husband died in the first scene. Yeah.
And it's also revealed that Alex is the only person who's ever seen Mr. LaBelle in his chair.
Mm-hmm.
So he's the one that needs to lead the family empire.
Right, right. But he's going to have to make peace with the fact that he's evil in order to do that.
And that he's going to have to murder his wife.
life.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, so now Fitz is Google searching packs with the devil, real or bullshit.
Yeah, I love that part.
Right. And as somebody who has murdered into the family, I imagine he was like, this is bullshit, right? Like,
he didn't murder into the family, though. He old made it into the family.
That's what I meant.
He knows about the ritual, but probably never thought he would need to do it.
I meant to say married into the family, not murdered into the family. Yeah, yeah. But he, like, this is one of those stories like your kooky grandmother tells you.
Yeah.
You know, you don't think it's real. And now absolutely. He's like, what the fuck? Am I actually going to die if I don't murder this girl?
And he, throughout the course of the movie, seems like he's not necessarily on board with it,
right.
But he's going along with the mob mentality.
And the money mentality, too.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because he does ask Charity, the wife, at one point, like,
are we going to do this?
Yeah, when do we just cut and run? And she's like, never.
Yeah, I'm ride or die, bitch.
Right. Yeah. So now she's outside because she's jumped out the window because while he's Googling whether or not packs with the devil are real.
I think he's still in the bathroom. I think that's still the bathroom window.
Wow.
He might not be.
He says in the movie he's got a nervous tummy. I feel you, Fitz. Yeah. I feel you.
And you got to have a big property to have a bathroom with that big of a mirror.
Well, they do. They're rich as shit. Anyway, out the window, you see her fall or sort of just jump to the ground. Mm-hmm. And he hears it, looks out. Mm-hmm. She's not there, looks back at his phone, and then that's when she gets up and runs away.
Right. And so she goes into a stable where there are lots of goats.
Yes.
And a very big, ominous cellar door.
Yeah.
And then she sees a little boy, one of the kids that I think is Emily and Fitz's kids.
Well, Georgie. Because she hides. Mm-hmm. She sees like a flashlight, so she hides in one of the pits.
Right.
And then she sees it's Georgie, this, like, I don't know, 10-year-old boy,
eight, somewhere
whatever,
around
very young
he's
kid.
Like a kid, whatever.
And
elementary.
She's like, oh, thank God, Georgie, help me get out of here.
But no.
Yeah.
Georgie shoots her right through the fucking hand, man.
She gets desperadoed.
She does.
It's horrible.
Wow.
That's an old reference.
I get it. You're welcome, Mikey.
It still checks out.
Yeah. But yeah, so just like Antonio Banderas, she becomes a badass and punches that child in the fucking face.
And then looks at the hole in her hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Black Phillip the goat headbutts her in.
Doesn't headbutt her or just scare her?
I don't know.
Who cares?
It goat devil magics her into the cellar.
And she falls through the cellar door into this. She probably falls like a good 10-15 feet onto dead bodies.
A pile of dead bodies,
It's all the good people who tried to join the family.
Yes.
It is, and we see the guy.
And previous maids, probably.
Yes.
Yeah, probably.
You're gonna have some pop-ons, you know. But we also see the guy from the very first scene. He's still got his arrows in.
Yes.
You know, and he's an older corpse. So she's screaming and it's real gross.
Well, yeah, she has a hole in her hand. So she starts to try and climb the ladder and the ladder starts to crumble.
Uh-huh.
And she's having to climb with one hand because the other hand was just shot.
And we keep seeing ominous shots of the top of this ladder, and one side is just normal, regular ladderness, and the other side has this gigantic nail sticking up, and I didn't think this was going to be as terrible as it was, but
oh man. So yeah, she's climbing the ladder and it's starting to like fall apart, and as she gets to the very, very top where it's just like the like flat surface of like the wood door, she grabs onto it and the ladder breaks.
Yep.
So she is just holding on with one hand because she can't use the other hand,
right.
And then there's that nail that
this
used to hold the door
is insane.
I, as a joke, said she should just throw her hand up there and like get that nail in the hole of her hand and then use that to pull it up.
Yeah.
And then that's what she does. And I regretted saying that so bad.
Oh, because it was awful.
It's so gross.
I thought it was going to peel her fingernail back.
Oh,
I thought
that
was the worst nail-related thing that could happen
here. No.
But no. Oh, my God. It is terrible.
So she swings her hand up there and like does her best crucifixion post. Yeah. She nails it. And then she uses that to pull herself up.
Well, and we had been having a conversation about, is this really a horror movie? Can you still call it horror?
Yeah, that conversation was right before this.
Exactly. Yeah. And they were like, yep, that's what makes it a horror movie.
And I was very grossed out.
I wanted to do that because my right hand's really strong from stuff.
Jeez. I believe you.
You nail the other hand all the time, too?
That's really good.
So she gets out. Oh, when she rips her hand up and like yells, that's so painful. Anyway, so she does get out of there and she like sits down and like rips a part of her dress and then wraps her hand
the
up.
The sleeve off.
Yeah.
And let's just say right now how amazing Samara Weaving is in this role.
She's great, man.
Because like when she's like, the reactions to these terrible things are awesome. And then she yells, you little fucker, at this kid. Which is really funny.
Who is knocked out. Like,
right, yeah.
Yeah.
So now she's running and the mean wife sees her and tries to shoot her with a rifle, but misses. And then we hear an eagle screaming or a falcon screaming or something.
That's my favorite part, is that none of these people know how to use any of these weapons. Right.
It is pretty great, but they're rich as shit. They don't know how to do anything.
So now she's at the gate and she's trying to get out and she's yelling at cars that are going by. And
it's not the gate. It's just the fence.
Yeah.
The fence. Yeah.
And she like rips off one of the poles or posts that's a part of this ironworked fence.
Because she's awesome.
She is awesome. And she like squeezes her way out while one of the one of the parts of the fence is like cutting into her back.
Yeah.
It graphically shows.
Yeah. It's really unnerving and like hard to watch.
Uh-huh. Because it's not a scratch. But it's there's like a deep cut.
Yeah. So there's like a ticking clock though, because she has to get out before that car drives by to get her to safety.
Right.
So she gets through the fence, gets out of the road and is like, help me, help me, help me. And he just like slows down and says, get out of the fucking road. Right. And then drives away.
And she just unloads every obscenity that she knows at him. All right, so now there's the evil family car that's driven by the butler.
Yes.
They see like a piece of her wedding dress that's been ripped off, so they know where she went.
Yeah, they know she went through the fence and she's in the woods somewhere.
Right. The butler keeps calling the family on like a speakerphone to tell them the updates, and they're all like sitting around the living room like, I hope he gets her.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Bring me my snifter of brandy, please. Yes, yes.
Capital.
They're again reminding us that if she lives until dawn, they're all going to die. And then half of them are like, that's bullshit. That's probably not going to happen.
That's just superstition.
Oh, wait. But do you remember when it happened to that other family? Like the, I guess it's a certain branch of the family or something. They all died in a house fire.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I thought it was like a whole different family. I'm like, so all these rich families have made deals with the devil.
I mean,
and I thought that's hilarious.
That's how you get to be the 1%.
You either make a deal with the devil or you best him in a violin competition and get to keep his golden fiddle.
You got
to
go down to Georgia first, though.
Yeah.
But they're also talking about other people who refuse to play the game, too. So they're like laying out the stakes. They're like, this is what happens when you do the things we said you should have done and just refuse to continue with this bargain.
This is when they're talking about like couples who eloped and all died.
But there is still some doubt.
Because that sounds crazy.
It is crazy.
Right. So now Emily and Adam Brody are going to the goat pit to dump the maids in there. And they're talking about whether it's real or not, because for all they know, it's not. Well, I guess because they're all still alive.
Right.
Know? And Adam Brody is talking about the last time they had to play and said he's always trying to look out for Alex. But if he had been a good brother, he never would have let him marry Grace because he wanted to protect him from this terrible stuff that happens. Mm-hmm. And he's saying we all deserve to die. And the sister says, but my kids don't deserve to die, which is an interesting element to this because, I mean, they were just born into this. Although you can't, if you're looking at the allegory of being a part of the 1%, you can choose to not continue that lifestyle.
Well, Georgie shot her.
That's true. Georgie did shoot her.
Yeah, I mean, those kids deserve to die.
Well, at least Georgie.
That's fair.
But, I mean, they're doing what they have been taught is normal.
It's nature versus nurture.
Sure.
Because that's an excuse that you can use to justify anything.
Yep.
You know, somebody told me this was the right thing to do. Like, you can, as a person, use your judgment and your empathy and your compassion and say, my family told me this is the right thing to do, but this is wrong, and I can make that choice for myself.
That's what Alex did when he moved away and cut them out of his life.
But now the kid is there, and he's saying, I shot the lady. And she bends down and she says, oh, I'm so proud of you.
Yeah, which is a like almost shot for shot of the very beginning when the mom says that to baby Adam Brody.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's his turning point, I think, because you see a reaction of him saying it too. And I think that's the part where he's like, I don't want to continue this cycle. So now Grace is running through the field, and this is when the butler is doing donuts to try to get to her.
Yeah.
And he gets out and he wrestles with her, and then she turns the tables on him because she's amazing.
Well, she slaps his burned face, which would hurt so bad. Mm-hmm. And then she starts to choke him with a piece of her dress.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I didn't notice it was a piece of her dress.
It was like cloth.
I love her so much because she's the one that caused that burn too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was a slow burn.
Ooh. Ooh. Good podcast, guys. Check it out.
So we think he's dead, but not so fast, because as she's driving away in the car he just left her considerately, he Terminator 2s and wakes up.
Dun, 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 dun. She honks the horn like that as she drives away. Yeah.
Meep, 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 meep. Yeah. And so she's in this car and she's calling Trip Safe, and she says, people are trying to kill me. Can you please help me? And we thought this voice was Adam Brody, and it's actually not. Sounds a lot like him, though.
Yeah, it sounds just like him.
Yeah, and I've got a fun fact of who it is. The car, and he's saying, well, the car was reported stolen, and I have to shut it down because your family is evil. And so the car just stops, and she's just stuck.
Well, no, that's just what OnStar does. That's technically within OnStar policy.
Yeah, that's what they would do.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Absolutely.
Can they do that?
Yeah.
So anyway, anyway, she tells Justin to go fuck himself, and he just kind of politely hangs up on her. But she also told him what was going on, so she's like, okay, the police are coming, right? But now the butler is back.
And he punches through the window.
Yeah.
Like a badass.
It's those gloves, those piano gloves.
He does still have his gloves on.
Yeah. And if you can play piano with those gloves.
Yeah, you can do anything. So the butler shoots her with a tranquilizer.
Yeah.
And then ties her up and throws her in the back, and then drives back to the house and calls the family, who is sitting down at this desk.
Right.
And they're like FaceTiming with the butler, and they're like, oh, Capital, bring her back.
Yes, you're a captain of industry and of kidnapping.
And then the butler turns up the symphony that he's listening to. He gets super into it and doesn't hear or see her waking up behind him. But the family is like, butler,
turn
look behind
down.
You.
Right.
You idiot. Mm-hmm. Look behind you. I thought this was pretty funny, actually.
I did too. And it's the 1812 overture. It's the end. It's the good part. It doesn't have the cannons in it, but it's okay.
It's so good.
It's amazing. Yeah. And I was like, turn it up more. He thinks it's triumphant for him, but it's actually triumphant for her.
Yes.
Because she kicks him and like foot flips the car.
Well, I think she kicks him twice in the face.
Knocks him unconscious.
Yeah. And then that causes the car to swerve and it flips off into the woods more or less. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so they both end up upside down and kind of knocked out in this car. Yeah.
And this is when Adam Brody, who left the house just trying to get away from everybody to clear his mind, like walks up on her as she kind of crawls out of the car and says, I came out here to get away from everything. And here you've landed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for driving through my relaxation.
And he has a rifle.
Yes. And he again has a chance to shoot her and doesn't.
He doesn't, yeah. But he does knock her out and is the reason that she gets caught. And so he's saying like...
But I'll say this. I think he only did that because the dad was there.
Yeah.
And it was either knock her out and let her take her unshot, or the dad was going to shoot her and then take her.
Because he knocks her out and says, come on out. Yeah. And the dad, he's like, did you know I was there? And he's like,
I have eyes.
Right. Yeah, I'm not blind. She's trying to bargain with him too. And I thought this was really interesting. He's like, Alex will never forgive you if you let them kill me. And he's saying, I hear you, but I can't let my entire family die for you. And she's saying it's bullshit. And he's saying, you know, Alex is the one who got out. He's the one who rejected this. I'm not going to be the one to save you. And so we also find out it's less than an hour until dawn. So now we have introduced a ticking Jumanji clock.
Oh, my God.
I was going to say a ticking sundial. But yeah, all of those sundial works. Yeah.
Uh-huh. My patience is a ticking clock.
So Alex is still handcuffed to the bed. And we've kind of been seeing cuts of him trying to like saw his way off.
Yeah, he's using the chain of the handcuffs to saw his way out of the bedpost.
Right.
Which I know from experience takes a long time.
So the mom is basically saying, well, we got her and this is going to happen. She's saying, because I have to protect the family. And Alex says, if she dies, then I'll kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And the mom's like, well, first, so I'm dead either way.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm going to try to protect my family. Also, I don't think you're actually going to do that. I know you better than this floozy that you just met a year and a half ago.
Right.
But she's also saying, like, I really like her too. I know I just said she called her a floozy, but she's like, I don't want to kill her. This is what I have to
do. We just have to kill her.
Yeah, we have to kill her. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, she's a mom trying to protect her children. So, I mean, I kind of see where she's coming from. She's protecting them with evil.
And she's operating under the assumption that it is true and that they will blow up if they don't kill her.
Right, exactly. And she's also asking why he left. And he's saying kind of what we were saying before, like I was slicing throats of goats. And he said, this is not normal. Kind of like I'm in a cult.
Yeah, he is in a cult.
Exactly.
It's a one family cult, but he is in a cult.
Right.
Well, more than one family.
Well, I mean, it all comes from the great grandfather who started it.
But like they knew that other family who also had their own little thing going.
Well, maybe that was like another wing of the family.
I thought it was like a branch of the family too. But I mean, it could be. I don't know.
But he's also saying he met Grace and Grace is the opposite of you.
Yeah. And she changed me.
Yeah. And I decided I didn't want to be part of this anymore.
Right.
So now we cut to the montage of them getting ready for this sacrifice is what it's going to be. They're putting their robes on. Fitz is trying to psych himself up.
He's like smacking himself. Right. Don't be a bitch, Fitz. I thought that was pretty funny.
Ant is being evil and awesome. Yeah, and the dad's saying, I'm going to make it right. I'm going to make it right. And he puts the box right in front of the fancy chair for LaBelle. And he's saying, I know this night, I know we're kind of incompetent, but we're gonna get this thing done for you, devil.
Yeah, yeah. So she wakes up. She's tied down to this big table.
They're all passing. It's a pentagram carved into the table.
Right. It is. They're all passing around this cup that Adam Brody has handed them.
Uh-huh.
And they're like drinking from it. Even Fitz drinks from it. He's like, ugh, that was gross.
Right. And it sounds like it might be poison. poison.
Yeah, and then the dad goes to like raise his hand after the sacrifice and he says hail, as in about to say hail Satan. Mm-hmm. But before he says Satan, he like throws up what looks like blood.
Uh-huh.
And then you see all of them start to throw up except for Adam Brody, who starts untying Grace.
Nice.
And then gets her out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And then he explains, as she asks, did you poison your family for me? And he's like, no, it's whatever. They're going to shit weird for a week, but they'll be fine.
Yeah, and I knew this was all going to have to burn down at some point. I just didn't think it was actually going to be me that did it.
Yeah.
But he did, and he saved the day.
I want to LaBelle out.
And he does.
He does, yeah.
But then his wife comes out, Charity, and she like raises a gun, and he steps in front of Grace, and she like shoots her husband in the throat because he won't move.
Well, and he tries to reason with her, like, hey, we don't need to be bad people. We can like we don't need the money. Like, he's like, I'm tired of this. We don't have to hurt people.
Yeah.
And she's like, you really wouldn't care if I died? Because she still believes that his actions are going to cause her death.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so, I mean, she's trying to defend herself too, just through evil.
And shoots her husband in the neck.
She does,
like
you
do.
Well, I really like Adam Brody's character because he knew he was going to die either way. Or he thought he was going to die either way. He's like, I don't want to be evil.
I don't want to be part of this anymore, even if it means I'm dying.
Well, right.
But he dies.
And
Grace gets away.
Grace charges at Charity as she shoots a couple of shots and then gets the gun away from her, tries to shoot her in the face, but she's out of bullets.
Mm. Yeah,
so she pistol whips her.
It's a six-shot revolver. So like when Grace finally has control of the gun and tries to shoot Charity, there's no bullets left. And then Charity charges her and she gets pistol whipped.
Right.
Yeah. And that's when Grace comes back to Adam Brody and says, thank you so much, but I'm going to leave now.
And she's like, I knew you were a good guy.
The dad finds her, and so she smashes through the dad, and we see something in the house catch on fire.
She takes a lantern. She takes his lantern.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They had old-timey lanterns the whole time.
Yeah.
It was very Luigi's Mansion.
The lantern was.
Yeah.
Eight people are going to get that joke.
I stand by it.
It's fire, though.
Yeah.
So anyway, the mom comes in. Well, they're in a different room. They go to a different room. And Grace,
the mom room on the game board.
So Gracie goes into a different room. Mm-hmm. The mom comes in and starts choking her.
Tries to shoot her with a crossbow first, but she misses. She's like, pardon me,
I think it's a regular bow and arrow, but she does miss. And she goes, pardon me, but it's been 30 years. I'm not as good as I used to be.
And quiet. Capital.
And then she goes over and chokes the shit out of Grace.
Yeah, you don't deserve a family.
And there's a big runner on the table that Gracie pulls.
Is that what those are called?
Yeah, they're big table runners.
Mm-hmm.
So Gracie pulls the box onto the floor because she's pulling the runner. The box is on that runner.
Mm-hmm.
Then she grabs the box and beats the fuck out of the mom until she dies.
Just fuck your family.
Also, pieces of the mom are stuck on the box.
Yeah like hair and blood chunks.
Yeah, it was real gross.
But this is when Alex comes in, sees that the mother is dead, and then they start to have this like weird, awkward dance of, should I hug you?
Right.
Do we console each other?
And she's like, no.
She's like, don't touch me.
She's like, I'm not into this. Which, that's what I would do too.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I love that they don't like run to embrace each other. Because I think a less well-written movie would have done that.
At this point, she's making like horrible noise. Like, guttural animal noises at him.
She's so good in this movie.
It's fucking amazing. I love
it. Dude, her screams in the next scene are insane. So good. Anyway, so Alex goes over and like puts his hand on her face and is like sort of like caressing her and saying, I'm gonna lose you after this, aren't I?
Right. Yeah, you're not gonna be with me on this, are you?
Right.
Yeah.
And she does not answer. So he puts his other hand on her face and starts squeezing her, and she's like, you're hurting me.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, like, she's in here.
Turns on her.
Stupid Alex.
Well,
yeah,
I mean,
man.
Yeah. But I mean, if you look at his motivation of not wanting to lose her,
right,
since he knows he's gonna lose her, he no longer cares about her life because he's a rich white a-hole who only cares about himself, really.
Okay. But the sun is about to rise and the aunt is there and says it's time for the boys to take their place because they're going to get this fucking ritual done.
Emily's boys,
because they got to learn to be evil too. Meanwhile, the house is still on fire.
How big is this house?
Dude.
That they're like, the house is on fire, but it's fine if we take 30 minutes to do this ritual.
Right.
Don't worry about it. It's cool.
It's really big house. Yeah. So they're holding her down and they're saying the crazy words, and this is
Kalima!
I think, but also this is when they say Hail Satan, right?
Yeah, they do.
The aunt says it first, and then they all say it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I loved that moment too. They're like, okay, fuck, we're not pretending anymore. We just don't want to die. This is what's really happening.
Well, that's part of the ritual. They were about to say that before, and then they
got poisoned.
Threw up. Yeah.
Well, and so now it's Alex at the head of the table, and he raises up, and he's about to stab her, and he does.
She dodges.
Not before Gracie, I think, bites the hand of someone who's holding her down, mm-hmm. and that makes them sort of let go a little bit, and she moves to the side.
Yeah.
So she only
shoulder.
Gets stabbed
gets
in, the,
her in
shoulder.
The shoulder.
Yeah.
And her screams when this happens,
it's
too.
It's so good,
like,
man.
She grabs the knife out of her own shoulder, mm-hmm. has like a guttural scream, uh-huh. and like moves to the corner and is like waving the knife around.
She's and this is when the aunt is like, the sun is up, and uh-huh. opens the curtains, and then the light comes in, and the whole family's like, reacts like a vampire would.
Right. Uh-huh.
They fright night.
Yeah, they're like, ah!
Right.
And they duck down below. And then like, it's probably a good 15 seconds,
uh-huh.
and Fitz sort of like sits up and he's like, oh, we're fine, guys. This
yeah,
is cool.
Nothing
like,
don't, happened. Yeah. I knew it was bullshit.
I guess it's all bullshit.
Right. And this is when Todd loses his faith in
this is
movie.
When the movie becomes real stupid.
I liked it.
Oh, it's so dumb.
The aunt grabs the axe and she's like, fuck, I'm just going to kill her right now.
Yeah,
we're
the girl
salvage
dies.
Something. And as she's doing that, she just explodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And plot aside, it's cool when she explodes.
It's, sure.
You know?
It's cool. Effects.
And that yeah. is not what I thought was going to happen.
Me either. I right. thought the movie was going to be good.
Hot takes from Todd. But
we'll
so she explodes
it.
And then they all start exploding.
Mm-hmm.
And the dad picks up the box. He's like, I followed all the rules. And I feel your pain, Dad. And he explodes. Then Alex comes up to her.
Who is sort of the last one left because everyone
is.
Has exploded.
Everybody else has exploded into chunks of blood.
Yeah.
And so Alex says, I'm not like them and I get a do-over and that's why I haven't exploded yet. And so she takes the ring off and she flicks it at him, says she wants a divorce, and then he explodes.
Yep.
Yep.
I like that.
I liked that part too. I didn't love, I agree with you on the ending, but once I made peace with this is what's happening, I like how it played out, you know?
It's almost as if he would have been able to stay alive if they had decided to stay together. But
yeah.
because she took the ring off and said, I want a divorce, and it was over for her, that's why he exploded.
No, I think he was going to explode anyway.
He might have.
But so the house is still on fire, and she, in a flash, sees Mr. LaBelle in a flash in the chair.
Yeah.
So the house is still on fire, and so she badass walks out.
Yeah, she walks out, sits down,
yeah.
and opens the cigarette case that the mother had and starts mm-hmm. smoking her cigarettes. And then we start to see flashes of like ambulance and police lights.
Right.
And then cops running behind her.
Yeah. yeah. And as she walks out, it's kind of a mirror of the wedding scene that we saw at the very
yes.
beginning, because the chairs are all still set up for the wedding. And now her dress is all ripped up and bloody.
Yeah.
But she sits down, she lights up, and they're like, are you okay? What happened to you? She said, in-laws.
And that's the movie.
Yeah,
and
roll
that's
the credits.
The movie.
Yeah. So now that we've talked through the movie, do you guys want to talk about the movie?
Can
so how do you guys feel about it?
Do you want to talk? So like, give us your hot takes.
I don't think they're hot takes. I think the yeah. ending is just bad. Like the whole time it is like a very socioeconomical sort of like she comes from lower class.
Yeah.
Right. And she is sort of against the richer class, like the 1%. And it's her against them the whole time, and they're fighting for their life, quote unquote, because mm-hmm. they made a deal with the devil, quote unquote.
Right.
And then you find out after she like survives and makes it that we should have actually been rooting for the 1% because they were gonna die.
Right.
Like they were right to try and kill her.
No, they weren't.
They absolutely were. It was them versus her. Mm-hmm. And if you had the choice of killing one person who you barely know or you and your entire family dying, you would kill that one person you barely know.
It's a horror movie. Not like, I mean, like they were evil.
But I think the point you're making is that their trying to kill her was justified.
Yeah. And also right. deals with the devil don't exist. It would have been a much fucking better movie if she survives, nothing bad happened to them
uh-huh.
supernaturally, but every fucking one of them goes to jail and
yep.
she gets everything, not just they explode because we don't have the money to do
she
the rest of the movie
properly.
She still
gets their money because she's still married to Alex. She is the only surviving member of the family. And you only have to hunt the good people. It was more of a good versus evil sort of thing, not, you know, I don't know. That's my take on it.
I thought it was so bad.
Well, I
like
think
laughably
because
bad.
The commentary that it's setting up on the 1% is that they view all of these people as expendable.
Yep.
And I think the fact that the curse was actually real and not just some like lie they've been telling themselves so that they could treat other people like shit kind of it undercut the message.
Yeah,
of that,
it did.
You know,
it
it's
really
like,
did.
Oh, we were justified in treating her like shit. Even though motive aside, there are going to be consequences if we don't treat these people like shit.
Yeah.
And what I wanted is for there not to be consequences
yep.
for that. And that they face the moral consequences that they would have faced.
Yeah. Like actual moral consequences that the 1% should face in this country.
No,
right.
Okay, but they are just the actual 1% are justified in their actions too because they protect themselves.
Yeah.
Right. And the movie was setting that
yeah.
up and then undercut themselves. Mikey's on board for the 1%.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, because the family was justified in defending themselves doesn't mean that they were fucking evil. They were still fucking evil.
Yeah, they definitely were fucking evil.
They are.
Right.
But I mean,
but they had every right to be evil.
But you guys are saying, a vampire coven is justified eating themselves so they can keep going.
No, I think what we're saying is we wanted that family to face consequences. Yes. We just wanted them to face more realistic consequences.
Yeah.
And I wanted them to have the realization that they should not have been doing this thing the whole time. Yep. Not because they were afraid of exploding, but because they were afraid of the shame and the real world consequences that they were going to have to face.
They don't get any comeuppance.
No, they don't.
They explode.
Yeah, they don't get any comeuppance.
Exactly.
It's just like someone who murders his family then shoots himself in the head.
Exactly.
Like, he doesn't ever have to deal with what he did.
No. Okay, so
he
in this universe, if you make a deal with the devil and explode, you're going to hell forever. So
hell doesn't exist.
The literal fucking devil appears in the kitchen and says, you didn't follow the rules or whatever. Jesus Christ.
I mean,
it's just the metaphor. LaBelle did appear.
He shows himself to her in the chair, also passing the curse on to her.
She did not
and signifying
cursed.
That she should lead the company.
No, that's
this,
not true.
This movie
that is not
badly.
True.
Yeah.
The devil box burns up in the house.
I bet it doesn't.
So we have a difference of opinions on what the ending of this should be. Now, I will say, I didn't mind the ending as much as you
did. I hated
it. I would have preferred the one that we were talking about, but I mean, I was okay with the way it ended. And I loved every single thing up to it. And once they started exploding, I liked how it played out.
I liked it because nothing supernatural had happened the entire time.
Mm.
So it could have been just a interesting movie, like a locked door mystery sort of thing. But it wasn't. It was a supernatural whatever because the writers are bad.
I think that was part of the mystery of knowing if it was supernatural or not.
And wouldn't the reveal have been fucking awesome if it hadn't have been? They all got arrested.
Yep.
They all got sent to jail.
Oh,
and
yeah,
she
because
gets to run
that
the
happens
empire?
To the 1%
well,
all the
because
time.
Because what would have
fucking
happened?
Should.
But it
the
won't.
The Sackler
it
family
wouldn't.
Should be in jail.
They weren't.
This was our chance to see it happen because we are not going to see that shit happen in real life.
God, I hate the 1% so
Man.
Much.
Anyway,
stupid ending. Loved the movie. But that's sort of how I feel about it. I loved the entire movie until the last 5 minutes, and I was like, oh, they could have. That's so close, guys. Mm. So close to a good movie.
Your face is not quite so red anymore.
It's a movie.
Yeah, you got so mad, Mikey. Do you guys want to talk box office? So what do you guys think the budget was for this movie?
$10 million.
$10 million and a dollar.
All right, you're both over. I'll say this. It does look great. So I understand why you guessed that $10 million range, but it's only taking place in one location. It was a $6 million movie.
But how much did the house cost?
$6 million.
No, Eddie McDowell cost $4 million.
I mean, honestly, they probably rented it for 20 days or whatever while they shot this movie quickly, but it's a super nice single location movie, which is why I think it was a little bit cheaper.
Yeah. Limited cast too.
Yes, that's true. And it made $8 million in its opening weekend.
Nice.
So it made money in its opening weekend. And it made almost $60 million total.
Nice.
It made a lot of money.
It did
great, yeah.
And it was very well received. I remember horror Twitter was freaking out about it.
A lot of people did mention this, even though it didn't do, it didn't hit really high in the rankings of the movies every weekend, but it did well overall.
Yeah.
I think what the weekend it came out, it was sixth. But it did great.
That's the thing about horror movies is that you can make a pretty good one on $6 million. And if you get a good word of mouth, you can make a lot of money on your movie.
That's Blumhouse's entire business model.
It is. But it works.
It does.
Blumhouse and A24 are the only studios that consistently make money because they follow that formula.
Yeah.
It made $57 million worldwide. I think I said close to 60. But that's really good on a $6 million investment. So do you have some fun facts for us, Jen?
I do have some fun facts.
Jen's fun facts.
So this was directed by Matt Bettinelli. Nelly Open, I probably said that wrong, and Tyler Gillette, and they are part of
the Gillette fortune.
Of the Gillette fortune. No, they're Matt Bettinelli, the first guy I said. So they're part of the Radio Silence group, and they directed the last segment
VHS.
Of VHS.
I remember you talking about them. Yeah,
The Haunted House. I'm not exactly sure what the makeup of that Radio Silence group is, but I know they were both connected to VHS.
But that's the one you loved.
There were 17 different versions of this dress.
Wow.
Just in the different states.
Yeah.
And the states of the dress were supposed to kind of mirror her state of mind
right.
as she was going through this movie. And I loved it. I thought this dress was amazing. It reminded me of like the Kate Middleton dress, only a little more like horror-esque. It was, I loved it.
I don't know
much.
What that is.
But there were also, it was long sleeved and lace. And oh, so okay. when you make, because a lot of wedding dresses are like strapless and, you know, but there was more fabric for her to rip off every time too. Yeah. And I think that was like shedding pieces of her old life. And I just loved it so much. So the revolver that Emily has, the weapon that she kept accidentally killing maids with, it's a pepper box revolver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a two shot revolver.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that is the gun, the version of the gun weapon in Clue.
Oh, yeah.
Ah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Okay. So the family is based on Milton Bradley and Parker Brothers, which apparently those are now defunct or out of.
They've been bought up by, I think, a venture capital firm. Yeah.
Big Hasbro.
Yeah.
Yeah. The masks that they wear in the beginning are reminiscent of the Twilight Zone episode, The Masks, similar to what the very wealthy family wears in the okay. that episode. I don't know enough about that to.
Well, yeah, I haven't seen the episode.
I haven't either. How to Use Your Crossbow, the video that he was watching.
Yeah, in the bathroom?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Fitz
one
was
of
watching.
The guy, yeah. One of the guys who was in that video, his character's name is Joe Early, and he was played by Ryan Murphy.
Mm-hmm. I don't know who that is.
He's the showrunner for all the American Horror Stories and the People versus O.J. Simpson. And he's
actually really, really good.
Yeah, and Glee. And so he does a lot of and Pose. All great shows. But yeah, he's
one of those. I mean, one of four is not bad. Yeah, 25% is pretty good. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Pose is really good.
Sure.
But anyways, yeah, so that was a big cameo for him.
That's awesome.
So her custom painted Converses, they're yellow because yellow is discontinued. So they had to get those custom painted.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, really?
I don't know if they were Chuck Taylors or not, but
I don't think
Converse.
They were. They were low tops, so... Yeah. I mean, you can get low top Chuck Taylors. I don't know. Yeah. They didn't look like it.
I used to have a pair of Hunter Green ones in high school that I wore all the time, and people would write on them.
I wear Chuck Taylors all the time. I love them.
So the voice of Justin, we thought was Adam Brody, but it's actually Nat Faxon.
Okay. I love how you say these names. Like,
yeah,
I'm supposed
like,
to know.
Like it's a big reveal.
So his name is Nat Faxon, and he's been in The Descendants and Bad Teacher. He was on Family Guy. He was Coach Herrera on Family Guy. He's been in a bunch of stuff. And I think he does. Oh, he's on Euphoria now, too.
Nice.
So not Adam Brody, but Nat Faxon.
They sound just alike.
They really do. All right, and those are my fun facts.
All right, well, thank you for your fun facts, Jen.
Well, you're very welcome.
So let's do some of that scary scale.
Hey, listeners. Our scary scale is a scale we use to rank how scary we thought the movie was. It's not a ranking of the quality. It's how scared we were today when we watched it. Our one example is Ghostbusters. Our 10 example is Texas Chainsaw Massacre. All right, Todd?
I'm going to give it a 3.
All right.
It is unsettling at points, gory and graphic at points, but not scary.
Yeah. Mikey?
I'm going to give it a 1.
Okay.
I was not scared.
Because
Mikey's
not
dead
scary.
Inside.
Yeah,
and I'm dead inside.
I'm going to give it a 4, mostly for that nail scene.
Yeah, that nail scene is what got me, man.
So yeah, 4. Not super scary, but really unnerving and things that tend to get me more than like jump scares and stuff. Yeah.
So this week, you guys made me watch Your Next. Mm-hmm. What are you guys making me watch next week?
Oh, I'm so excited. We are watching another newer one. We're watching Green Room.
Mm. Is that like where you wait before you go out to like be on stage or whatever?
It is. Yeah.
This movie actually makes me sad because I love Anton Chekhov.
Anton Yelchin?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's in it.
You love him so much you can't remember his last name? Oh, wait. He played Chekhov. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I got you. That makes sense. Yeah. He got crushed by his Jeep.
Oh, it was sad.
And his family sued Jeep and got a shitload of money.
Good.
So, guys, watch Green Room before next week.
Also starring Captain Picard.
No shit.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, cool. What's his name? Mikey, the time has come for you to practice your reading skills yet again with this week's review. You ready, Mikey?
Yeah, I guess so.
This review has an accent, a Shiba Inu accent, which a Shiba Inu is like a Japanese dog. They're about 30, 35 mm-hmm. pounds. I actually went to a Shiba Inu puppy tea house in Japan when I went. It was amazing.
Did the dog serve you tea?
No.
We get it, Todd. You've gone places.
It was awesome. They have like tea and they bring you tea, but there's also like 30 little Shiba Inu puppies that are like super friendly and playful and they come up and like play with you. It's so much fun. So Mikey, can you read this review?
Yes, this is from Dazed and...
I know. I thought I was going to be Dazed and Confused, but
it's just
Dazed
and
It.
Yeah. Nothing else. Dazed
so
and.
We're confused about what the title was.
Yes. Yeah.
It's meta.
The Todd cat. The title.
Indeed.
The title is Best Podcast.
No.
Awesome chemistry between hosts.
Awesome chemistry between hosts.
Never fails to make me laugh.
Never fails to make me laugh.
I like how they
can get it.
I like how it trailed off at the end.
Five stars.
Yeah, five stars.
Oh, thank you.
So thank you very much, Dazed, and for that awesome five-star Shiba Inu review. So guys, if you want us to read your five-star review, leave us a five-star review, and then we might read it.
Yeah,
so,
leave a emoji.
Oh, yeah, an emoji.
Oh, yeah, dude, I would love to see you do an emoji.
Or an accent, or whatever else.
Yeah, either one. So if you leave us a review, we might very well read it on the podcast. And honestly, it helps people find the show anyway.
It does.
Because of ranking logistics reasons. So help us out with that by leaving us a review. All right, so we are a member of the Modern Horrors Podcast Network, which means if you're listening to us in their feed, you're getting the show on Wednesday, but you should switch over to our feed because you get it 2 days earlier. But if you're listening to it in the Modern Horrors feed, you're also getting the awesome Modern Horrors Podcast, Death, Dying, and Other Things, and the lovely Final Girls. Yes. We can be found on social at Horror Virgin. We can all be found individually at Jen Ferratu, yes, at mrandolph24, and at Todd J. Awesome. And of course, you can find us on the web at horrorvirgin.com, where you can get Jen's awesome blog and links to the merch store. And if you want to help us financially support the show, please do by going to patreon.com/horrorvirgin. We have a lot of great levels there. Although the $50 spot is almost completely taken up because we limit that to 10 spots and we're currently at 9. So if you want to be that last one to squeak in there, get it done.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of other great levels. And honestly, if you can't financially support the show for whatever reason and you want daily exclusive content, hop over to the Facebook group and join that, because we are in there every day. And
we are.
You literally, when we say daily free exclusive content, that is what you get there.
Tell your friends.
Yeah, tell your friends. Honestly, that's another great way to get the show out there. Just tell your friends and family about the show. Yeah. We really appreciate that. We've honestly grown so much over the course of this year, and we haven't spent any money on marketing because we don't have any money. So like, we really appreciate you guys telling your friends and family about the show, because that's the only reason it's been growing.
Yeah, and as the last episode of 2019, we just want to thank you all for helping us get there, you know, because we couldn't have done it without you.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, we could not have at all. So thank you very much for that.
Right. Well, guys, that's going to be it for us for 2019.
Yeah, thank you guys for sticking with us for a whole year. Mikey, you've been on the podcast a year.
You have.
That's really weird.
I know. I don't know if any of us were ready or not.
I'm so glad you joined.
Yeah. So yeah, it's been a great year. We're looking forward to some really exciting things to do and experience. We're looking forward to some really fun.
Wow, Jen, yes.
We're looking forward to some really fun things that are coming up in January.
Yeah, look for some awesome announcements in January, guys.
Yeah. So I'm Jen.
I'm Mikey.
And I'm your Horror Virgin Todd, guys.
Have a beautiful year.
Yeah, and have a great and safe New Year's Eve, guys.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Don't drink and drive. Uber.
And if you go out with people and they make you like pick a weird card out of a box,
don't do it.
Get the F out of there.
But I love drinking games.
Bye!
What's that?
Sexy nerds.
How do you use a
crossbow? Welcome back to Your Crossbow and You.
It's real. They're actually really easy to use. That guy was a
genius. I know. You just pull the thing. Yeah. It's like a gun.
Yeah.
What an idiot.
It's like riding a bike.